Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
From a secret studio buried deep within the Rocky Mountains comes LA Talk Radio's very own The Writer's Block, starring Jim Christina, Bobby G. Bell, and Russ Avison when he decides to show up. We bring you only the finest writers, playwrights, musicians, songwriters, and poets that can be offered in the United States and the world. So stick around, tune in, put your feet up, and have a great time. We're coming at you right now. Well, welcome to the Writer's Block right here on LA Talk Radio. And I am, of course, your host, Jim Christina. And as our guest tonight calls me, the infamous cowboy. So there we have. And of course, I am on the air with my lovely, delightful co-host out there in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Miss Bobby Jean Bell.
Good evening to you, Mr. Christina. Oh, my gosh. I can't wait to get talking with Claire Fullerton. We have another guest first, don't we?
Well, it's the first Thursday of the month, and that means, ta-da, Mr. Henry Park.
Well, hello, boys and girls.
Hello, Henry.
It's that time again. How are you?
Good.
We're good.
Good. Excellent. Well, we're all still stuck indoors and looking for ways to fill our time. I'm told that reading a book is a good idea. But if you're looking for Western movies, I have great news.
Okay.
Shout Factory. Yeah. Shout Factory has begun streaming Gene Autry's Westerns.
Yes, they have.
Yes, from his personal archives, the Gene Autry Entertainment, and they're beautifully restored. They began May 1st with 5 titles, South of the Border, Gaucho Serenade, Melody Ranch, The Strawberry Roan, and Blue Canadian Rockies. There will be 5 more added on June 1st, and I believe every month thereafter, like the rest of our lives, because he made a lot of them.
95?
Oh, yeah, he did.
95 or 98 or 96, something like that.
Some crazy number like that, yeah. Well, no, you know, I told you the last time that I was on that the INSP channel has made a new Western, The Warrant. It's been selling out at Walmart and doing well on all the streaming platforms, and it will actually premiere on INSP on June 20th. I had the pleasure of doing interviews with the film's 2 leading men, which will soon be in Henry's Western Roundup, the normally scary Neil McDonough. And thank you, Jim, for giving me the correct pronunciation.
I've been saying that forever.
Now, Neil is usually scary, but he's heroic here. And Casper Van Dien, the hero of the Starship Trooper films and many others, is very scary here. Now, if your taste runs more to the spaghetti side of Westerns, I don't have the exact release date yet, but The Price of Death will soon be available. It's made by a lot of the same team that made the delightful 6 Bullets to Hell. They sent me the link like an hour ago, so I've only seen the first 10 minutes, but at least it's a very good first 10 minutes. Another movie recently out on Blu-ray from Lionsgate, which I'm reviewing in this week's roundup, is Lizzie, about the infamous 1892 axe murders of the father and stepmother of Lizzie Borden. Chloe Sevigny stars as Lizzie, Kristen Stewart is the housekeeper, and I've never seen quite so much of either of them before. I don't know if I'd give it 40 whacks, but I'd give it quite a few.
Okay, I got that.
Well, since I wondered if I'd get away with that.
Now,
since we last got together, we've had a couple of sad passings. James Drury, TV's The Virginian, and writer-producer Andrew J. Finity, who wrote Chisholm for John Wayne, created The Rebel for Nick Adams, produced Branded, The Hondo Series, and so many more. The current roundup features my interview with James Drury, And there's a link to the unsold pilot James Murray did right before The Virginian, The Yank, which was written by, as it turns out, Andy Fennedy. And in the roundup that I'm posting this weekend, I'm reprinting my career interview with Andy Fennedy. And you can read about that and so much more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
And there you are, Henry. You are the man.
Thank you.
Hey, I have a question for you.
Please.
It's on the trivia side. Was Ride the High Country, understandably one of Sam Peckinpah's better westerns, was it?
I consider it his best myself.
Oh my God, it's such a wonderful movie. I can watch it, you know, every week. Was that James Drury's very first big part?
It was certainly one of his very first. He was. He told me, it's in the interview. I'm trying to remember who it was who they originally wanted for that. Robert Culp. He had done Trackdown with Robert Culp shortly before that. So he'd done a few other things, but this was his first big part in a movie. And they wanted Culp to play the part that Drury did, the brother, but Culp's agents wouldn't let him do it because they think Culp is playing heroes now. We don't want him to play anyone so nasty.
Right.
So that's
right.
Why Drury got that part.
Now, I understand, and I may be wrong. You probably know better than I. It seems to me that I read someplace that casting two old Western stars, Randolph Scott and Joel McRae, in the leads in this movie was something of a challenge for Peckinpah when he made it, because everybody told him that's not going to work. You need the new stars.
I believe that's true. And yeah, they were guys that were at the very end of their careers. I mean,
right.
Randolph Scott never did another film, and Joel McRae did one more that is worth forgetting. So yeah, it was a tough sell. A lot of the same sort of problem that John Ford had, when he was doing, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, that they said everyone in it is too old.
Right.
Although at least Peckinpah was having old guys playing old guys.
Right.
Because with Liberty Valance, they had to shoot in black and white to try and hide how old Jimmy Stewart and John Wayne were.
Right. Yeah, it's I've Ride the High Country has always been one of my very favorites. One more question, Henry, and then I'm going to let you go.
You bet.
The movie The Kid, have you seen that with Ethan Hawke?
Yes, I have.
And your thoughts?
I like it. I don't think it's a brilliant work, and I'm sorry to say it's been a few months, and if I knew you were going to ask me, I'd have taken another peek at it. I think the idea of telling the story of Billy the Kid from the point of view of a kid that's being influenced by that the kid, it is not Billy, it's a child type kid who's influenced him. I thought it was a very fresh idea, and you know, there have been like 250 movies made about Billy the Kid. To come up with a fresh approach is very difficult, and I really thought it was quite good. I was surprised it didn't get more attention.
All righty. Well, Henry, thank you so much. You go back to listening to Spike Jones, where it won't bother you anymore.
Okay. Happy trails, folks.
And we'll be talking to you the 1st of June. Be good, my friend.
You too. Take care, guys.
Okay. Bye-bye. So, bye-bye. With us tonight is a returning veteran of the writer's block. She is a Southern girl. We'll readily admit that she's a Southern girl. In fact, once you get talking to her, you automatically know she's a Southern girl. She lives in Malibu with her husband, three German shepherds. She is a writer extraordinaire. Somebody said that she's on the same league with I don't know, one of the big writers coming out of the South. Who are they? Come on, somebody help me out here.
Was he William Faulkner?
William Faulkner, there you go. I had a massive brain fart just then. Okay. So please welcome back for her third visit to the writer's block, Miss Claire Fullerton.
Hello, y'all. How you doing? I'm happy to be with you again.
Oh, my gosh. You know what? Yours is one of our favorites.
We're so excited when there's a new title from Claire.
I know. It's just like,
thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You know, does she ever sleep, this woman? It's like Bobby Jean.
No, I don't.
I don't think she does.
What's the point? Life is wasting, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, your newest book, Little Tea, of course, takes place in the South, as do all of your books. Because, of course, you are a Southern girl, so why not put them there? Mm-hmm. You write again in first person, which I've gotten used to reading in from you, and I like them. They're lyrical that way. I don't think going third person, they wouldn't be near as lyrical as they are going first person.
But quite possibly. Never thought of that.
Yeah.
This book eerily reminded me of The Big Chill.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah, all the friends getting together after all the years, and it just seemed like it kind of like it was a reminiscent of The Big Chill. It wasn't the same, but it just kind of gave me a memory of The Big Chill, which
I really like that. That's wonderful to hear. And I think that because Little T is written in two time frames, mm-hmm. in that the premise starts out with three childhood friends who all met when they were, say, 12 or so, and now they're in their late 40s, and they have disparate lives, and they live in three different locations in America. And it starts, the book starts off with a reason for them to convene, and they do so at Heber Springs, in Heber Springs, Arkansas. It's a place called Greer's Ferry Lake, and it's 340 miles of waterfront, gorgeous property, and people have the chalet chic houses, and all geared towards lake life. And this is where these three friends convene.
Right.
And in so doing, we come to find out that the narrator, who lives in California, was hesitant to say, yes, I'm coming down south where we grew up. Yes, I'm coming down there. And I was about 25 pages into writing Little Tea, which started out wanting to celebrate the magical lifelong friendships that women have, wherein they speak their own language. They have their own way of understanding each other. It's like a secret society, mm-hmm. and they have each other's history, and they have each other's back, and that type of thing. But 25 pages in, I said, I've got to answer the question. Now, why doesn't the narrator want to fly down south? And when I started writing the narrator's backstory, I was about four pages into it, and I said, I think this is the story here. And so I started writing about Celia Wakefield's backstory. And because I think we all have this. You know, you get old enough, and you got a backstory, and you have things that happened to you, and you have people that hurt you, and you have things that affected you. And, you know, how we wrestle with that, how we manage that, our history, while we're moving forward, is really became part and parcel to the storyline. And so on the one hand, we have the three women friends together at the lake house, and they're there because one of them wants to leave her marriage. She's on the fence. She doesn't know what to do with her life, and her friends come to her aid, and that's why they're down there for the weekend. But then the narrator's story starts to unfold as prompted by the storyline of the three women in the current time at the lake house. And so I had the narrator's backstory unroll, if you will. And it turns out that there is indeed a bit of tragedy involved in the narrator's backstory. So that was that's the setup of Little Tea. And I did really enjoy the writing of it. It was for me just nothing but an enjoyable experience. I didn't struggle or labor or even pause in the writing of it. I just ran with the story. And so I'm glad y'all like it. I'm very pleased to hear that.
Well, I was going through it, and I didn't read every page twice, but I did read a lot of passages twice.
Well, Jim, you'll have to go back.
I know. I mea culpa, Claire. I swear to you. But I will say that there is that I'm not going to give it away, but there is a twist towards the end.
Oh yeah.
And I kind of saw it coming in the middle of the book, but then I tell, well, is it really? But then it did happen. It wasn't a big surprise, but it was a surprise still.
Good.
It was very well done, Claire, I have to say.
Thank you, Jim. I really appreciate that. And it's just so wonderful to hear anybody that likes anything you do understands what you're doing. It's just a delight for me to hear. So I thank you.
Well, you know, next week is our 50th year anniversary.
I know. I can't believe it. 257 shows next week.
We have read so many books that we actually have come to understand how they're written.
Right, yeah. And you're not in Los Angeles anymore, neither one of y'all.
No.
I'm in Idaho. I'm in my top secret studio somewhere in the Rocky Mountains.
That's wonderful to hear. And Bobby Jean, you are in Arizona.
We're in Albuquerque.
New Mexico.
Albuquerque,
oh, you're in
Mexico.
Albuquerque.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're all on phone.
Yeah, yeah, we can still still do this.
When you listen,
well,
when
I'm
you
just
listen
so glad you
to
kept
podcast.
The show together because it's really, it's a wonderful show and you always have good writers on it. So I appreciate
so
being
much.
Here with y'all.
Thank
Claire,
you so much.
I'm bursting at the, can I ask, Jim, can I ask a question?
Of course you can.
Okay. So, oh gosh, I have so many questions. Okay. So you have these three ladies that have been friends, like you were saying forever, Celia, Ava, and Rennie. Celia becomes our narrator and I feel a lot of Claire in her because she says things like using the perfect word, you know, matters to me.
Right.
And she doesn't speak a whole lot. And yet, the way she views the world through her eyes, oh my goodness, the way sounds and textures and colors and the sun are how she gives that to us. I guess she's a little more silent than the two friends, but she's full of life and information, and her use of words is so very wonderful. But how did she come to be the, you have three really interesting women and you have Little T, and it's named Little T. So you have four really interesting women. How is it that Celia is the one that stepped out of the four to become your narrator?
I think that going into the writing of a novel, you have to arrive upon whose point of view, when you're writing in the first person. And I prefer writing in the first person because I prefer reading in the first person. And, you know, that's just my preference. And I can tell you why, you know, Bobby Jean. And the reason why is I want to know who I'm listening to. I want to know who's telling the story. And so going into Little T, I chose the vantage point of somebody who lives in California and was hesitant to fly back home. And then, okay, why? And so in making the story, nobody was more surprised than I as I wrote that book, because I didn't go into the project with an outline. I just started telling the story, and I had the desire to really capture the way good women friends are when they're together and there's nobody else around. Their husbands aren't around. Nobody else is around. And I was marveling, and dare I say it, that were a man to walk into the room, and three women friends were doing their thing. And by that, I mean giving each other counsel, sage advice. Mm-hmm. Great earth-shattering insight. Mm-hmm. If a man were to walk in the room, they'd all kind of straighten up.
Well, it's all
and I've noticed that over the years with my friends, and I've thought, well, why don't I just go on and try to capture that of how we were if there were a fly on the wall, and how we really are when we're essentially uncensored.
Absolutely.
And so it was that. And with Celia Wakefield, you know, you have to make a choice. Who's telling the story and what's their story and why are they telling the story? And by the way, what's the story?
Yeah.
What's the story?
Right.
And her
backstory. Yeah, her backstory.
Her backstory, of course, as you develop it, is just rich with, oh my gosh, what an interesting character that, you know, still waters
well, that's
my
the South. That's the South for you.
Yeah.
Because the South, I think, you know, from my perspective, has some of the more engaging characters, just glittering, wonderful, special people, very unique. And it's probably a cultural thing, but it's well worth writing about.
Right.
You know, if you can find an angle, and you know, it has much to do with the terrain, you know, with the humidity, with the lifestyle, and the ties to the land, and the reverence for one's forebears. That Southerners are huge on who's your family. Where do you come from? Who are your people? You know, and they take great pride in identifying with who they are and where they come from. And so it's much fodder to put into a novel because it's real and it's there. And if you can just find a way to get it into a story, you know. And so, yeah, I do that because it's worth telling about.
There you go.
I think
I'm gonna cut you off right there, real quick.
Okay.
Because I have Bobby Jean is sitting here, and she's probably chomping at the bit.
Oh.
And she has a live commercial she wants to run for us. So, Bobby Jean, take it away.
I just want to quickly tell you all about a website that I found. Actually, J.R. Sanders, an author from a couple weeks ago. This is an amazing website. It's bookshop.org. And if you don't know about it, you need to go check them out. Anybody can become an affiliate, and you can actually promote the books you love. Authors are taking their own pages. Publishing houses are taking their own pages. If you lead a reading group, you could take your own page. You can build your own book list. All the books are distributed through Ingram Distribution, and monies raised go to support independent booksellers. This is a fascinating site. It started about 3 months ago. They're just going gangbusters, and a percentage of every sale goes, again, to support local bookshops, independent booksellers. They've currently raised $1,323,000 and change. And Out West has become an affiliate. We have our own page there. You can go to bookshop.org, and then you can search by books or by shops. You can put in Out West shop, and our affiliate page will come up. And one night I just couldn't stop posting books. And I've created all different kind of book lists. And in fact, Little T is there.
Oh, I am just honored. I mean, what a wonderful,
endeavor. Yeah, it's a
fantastic.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And I think the word still isn't quite out. I had a question for them, and it took them a few days to get back to me. But the immediate response I had is, we are only 12 weeks old, and we are inundated. And it's really exciting. So if you're a reader, go check this out. Make this the place you buy your books. Support local independents, independents across the country, and start at bookshop.org to learn all about them. And if you want to see what Out West Shop has created for book lists, then search the shop. Click for shop. You want to search by store, I guess it is, and put in Out West Shop, and then you'll see all of the book lists I've begun.
That's wonderful. And I'm just so glad you've said this, Bobby.
It's a fabulous place. Fabulous place to go. So,
agreed.
Thank you, J.R.
Totally
Sanders,
agree.
For telling me about it.
Well done, Bobby.
That's it, Jim. Are we there? Are we still there? Hello, hello?
I'm here. You? Where's Jim?
Okay. Oh, I don't know. Maybe he's Googling. Bookshop.org.
I actually had muted my mic. It's 7:23. We're back in the studio with Claire Fullerton and, of course, Bobby Jean Bell. And we're talking about her new book, Little T. And Claire, I have to say that, I mean, every book that I've read of yours, which is now three or four, your character development in your books is so great. It's just like, it's just like you spend a lot of time putting these people together. And I really appreciate that. And as a writer, I try to do the same thing. But your characters are just so three-dimensional.
Thank you so much.
They jump off the page at you.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate you saying that. I think that there's a lot that goes into the makeup of a human being. Mm-hmm. You know, all people have a lot going on. And I think that it's, you know, the writer's job to really, really lay that out in terms of, well, most saliently, I think, is a character's motivation. You know, what is it that's driving them? What is it that's causing them to act and react the way that they do? And typically you find, you know, with people that it is attendant and you know, tangential to their history. You know, that what has happened to them, perhaps in their coming of age or, you know, or whatever. And these things affect, and they are essentially what motivates us as people. You know, they help to be part and parcel to who it is that we become. And I like to look at that because I'm fascinated in people, always have been, and who they are and why they're that way. And so that's usually my aim in everything I've ever written, is to find that common ground that all readers can say, ah, me too. You know, I can identify with that. And, you know, because you want to find the common ground with, you know, just of the human experience.
Sure.
You know, you want to find that common ground and build a story from there. Upon that common ground. And so I appreciate you saying that.
Well, I appreciate saying it, I guess. Okay.
it seemed that
moving on.
Well, I just wanted to say that although we have these sort of four main ladies, every character that you introduce, whether it's a brother, you know, of a character, it's a past boyfriend, it's Celia's ancestors, you give us a fully developed character. They're Little T's dad and mom are also examples that every character that comes onto the page, you have breathed life into them. Even if they're only on that page or they appear, you know, later, they're fully dimensional. They're three-dimensional. Like, they're like, we're looking at them on the movie screen. We can see how they breathe and what they're wearing and get a sense of how they speak. And that makes for such a rich storytelling, I guess, is what I would, you know, that each character is just so interesting how you flesh them out.
I appreciate that. And I think that for me, where I like to do that is in the dialogue. And, you know, obviously every writer on the planet and then some has heard the expression show, don't tell. And,
right.
You know, it's not that I adhere to that while I'm writing anything, but I do have a sense of the flow of things. And, you know, with regard to dialogue, I do hear it in my head. And I think that what you want to do with dialogue is break it up a bit by, you know, the character's movements.
Right.
Or if they adjust a piece of their clothing or pull their hat back or whatever it's going to be. But the simple gesture of tipping your hat back a little bit more off your forehead, you know, what does that tell the reader? You know,
he's following what your character is doing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that if you can give a character movement in dialogue, that there's a lot communicated there,
right?
In terms of just an ordinary gesture, you know, these kinds of things. I think that, you know, Bobby Jean used the expression, you know, breathing life into it, and I think that's how it happened.
Uh-huh.
It's always in movement, I've found, you know,
uh-huh.
And so as well as you know, in dialogue, a character's choice of words, you know, tells us who they are and where they're from and these kinds of things. And,
absolutely.
You know, so from an author's vantage point, it is therefore about consistency. Uh-huh. Because if you can have so many different characters, you have to really have a good feel for who they are and what would potentially, you know, come into the dialogue based mm-hmm. on who they are, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's, I think that from my process, I can see it and I can hear it. And so I write it the way that I see it and the way that I hear it.
Which raises a question, Claire.
Yeah.
There's a lot of young writers and new writers out there that struggle with dialogue, and I can understand why, because dialogue's not easy to write. And if you have the knack for it, you do. And if you don't, you don't. I mean, it takes a lot of work to get it right. When you're writing your dialogue, do you read it back out loud to make sure that it's correct?
I have done so before. I think that I have a husband who never misses a trick, never misses anything, you know, and I've, you know, called him into my office and many times and said, you know, let me read you something. And, you know, does this sound authentic? And, you know, he's really good at divining detail mm-hmm. and all of that. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very lucky on that front to have that, because, you know, I trust his judgment.
Well,
and so there's that. But yeah, I think with dialogue, you have to say for the scene and just for me, I write in scenes.
Right. Well, you know? Yeah. Sure.
And so you got to say, you know, what's the point here? What information, you know, what are they trying to say? What's the point of this scene in this dialogue?
Uh-huh.
You know, and so, you know, if you have a point to it, and then it's almost as if these individual scenes, when you're writing them, they're like a circle. They have
right.
a beginning, they have a middle, they have an end.
Exactly.
And it needs to fit at that end. And I have... I am saying this as an insight in hindsight, that I didn't really know this going into any of the books that I ever read. And yet now that I've been asked, I can tell you that that's how I work.
Okay.
You know? So dialogue, I think to speak to that is, you know, if you have a point of why the conversation's going down, then, you know, then it becomes pretty easy. That's,
sure.
You know, for me, it does.
So the question begs to be answered. When you call your husband into your office, does he roll his eyes and go, oh, God, not again? That's what I get.
You know, I can't speak to what he's doing internally, but he's a gentleman, you know, and he will show up with a smile on his face. How about that? No, I don't know what he's thinking. But
okay.
I know how he's acting.
That's a fair answer.
Yeah.
Hey, let's take a real quick break here for LA Talk Radio. Hey there, J. Michael here for LA Talk Radio. And you know, while you're on furlough or just playing staying home because of the coronavirus, if you're working at home, what better way to pass your day than to tune in to www.latalkradio.com and listen to some of our fine broadcasting during the day. We have a lot to offer. We have a lot on the air, so give us a listen. Right now, we've got one of your favorites. LA Talk Radio's very own The Writer's Block, and it's coming at you right now. So kick back, relax, and enjoy. And that's LA Talk Radio, and they've been very good to us, and we've got 5 years with them almost next week, and they've just been terrific, and we've had a great time doing it, and we've had some wonderful authors on, Claire, and we've just had a really good time with this whole thing. So
congratulations on 5 years of a good run.
Thank you.
Congratulations. I mean, that is really, really impressive.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of shows don't last 5 years, and you know, we made a promise. We made a promise as long as we've got good authors out there wanting to be on the show, and we're booked up through November.
I believe it.
That's happened every year.
You do it weekly. You do it weekly.
We do it weekly.
Yeah.
So anyway, LA Talk Radio has been really good to us, and we enjoy doing it. And the people here are terrific. And so just keep listening. And they do have some wonderful programming on during the day. Not just our show, of course. Our show is the best. But then, but they do have some good programming on during the day. And as long as you're stuck home, might as well just tune in to latalkradio.com and listen in, because there's some great stuff on. Okay.
And Jim, is the master of humility too. Absolutely humble guy.
I have no humility anywhere in my body.
Part of your appeal.
That's the Sicilian in me. Okay. Bobby Jean, I'm sure that you have a question. If not, you can ask the question.
It's time probably for the, well, I just wanted to say that it seemed that a common theme for all these ladies in this book is, what is happiness? Do we deserve it? How do we find it? Do you have any comments, Claire Fullerton, writer and woman of the world, about happiness?
All I know is that I have no idea what it is for the guy standing next to me. And I think we all have our version of what happiness is. And I don't think that there's a blanket answer for that, because we're all so calibrated individually and differently. Again, according to our backstories, according to who we are, according to our histories. And so one person's idea of happiness might be utterly meaningless to the person standing next to him.
That's true.
And that's what it is. And it is what makes the world go round. But I will say, it's a fascinating subject. When one has the impression that, you know, wait a minute now, everybody else is blissful, or at least they're acting like it. What's wrong with me that I have all of this internal turmoil? I'm asking these questions. I'm in fear. I'm in doubt. Everybody around me is normal. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what's wrong with me? Because I'm supposed to be happy, because on paper, I should be happy. If you look at me on paper, right. I should be blissful.
Yeah.
But what is it within me that is not reconciled? And I think that we all have that somewhere. And so, you know, the big joke with the girls, and why I kept that as a running issue, as I did in the book, was because nobody has an answer. And so if you can pose a question in a novel that you know going into it, nobody has the answer to this, well, then you can keep that thread going, and you can examine it from upside and down.
Right.
And it is an endless subject.
Yes.
And so that's the reason why I had the girls chewing on it repeatedly in the book, because it was this, you know, illusion. I am supposed to be something that I am not.
Right.
Tell me what I need to do to remain in a state of bliss. And the answer to that is, that's the funniest question I've ever heard in my life, because there is no answer.
Well, because nobody ever remains in a state of bliss. Everybody, I mean,
never.
You know,
we're not wired that way.
No, we're not. I mean, you know, when we finally settle down to whatever relationship we're in, I think it becomes more companionship and comfort. And then a state of bliss. I don't even think I've ever been in a state of bliss, actually, to be honest with you.
Well, I think if you ever sat
in a room and just sat in a chair and listened to the chattering of your mind, and just how insane you are, you know,
my mind would never want to hear anything that's coming out of it. This is a question I don't think I've ever asked one of our writers before, and so you're the first. I say our writers because I believe we own them now. No.
You do. You definitely own me.
I love it. Do you write, when you sit down and write, do you write to make yourself happy, or do you write to make other people happy?
I write to compare notes, and I like to bring insight into the equation if and when I feel it, you know, when I'm on a subject. Uh-huh. And I am, when I write, and again, this may be the caveat of of you know choosing to write in the first person repeatedly. Mm-hmm. But I am definitely telling a story and assuming that I am being heard. Now, uh-huh. Whether that's by one person or 100 is utterly incidental. And right. So I'm telling the story in order to be heard to compare notes.
Right.
Because my assumption is whoever is going to read a novel that I've written, that I have given them something here. Take a look at this. What do you think? Because I want the reader to align with it and think about it and say to themselves, well, she's got a point here, but I think that, you know. And so I go into it, into a project, not necessarily wanting to make anybody happy or myself or the reader happy. It's more of a, for me, an intimate sort of confessional type of exercise wherein I'm saying to the reader, all right, this is who I am. This is what I got. What about you? Mm-hmm. And that is what motivates me, I think. I've never really thought about trying to make anybody happy. I assume I'm not. You know? I mean, I just assume everybody's got their own, you know, whatever going on with their idea of happiness and all that. And you know, I'm just going to show up and say, what do you think?
So your deal is you're telling a story.
I'm telling a story because I go into every novel I've ever
right.
written
right.
with a point. With a
right.
point.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like what's the
fair
point?
Answer? That's a fair answer.
Yeah. Good so, question, Jim.
Oh, thanks, Bobby. Are you going to ask the question?
I will ask that famous question. So, Claire, share with us, do you ever get writer's block? And if you do, what do you do about it? And if you don't get it, what do you think about it?
I've never called it writer's block. What I do is respect the process. And I think that you could, I don't think you could label it writer's block. And the reason why I say this is because I assume that there's an entire life force to a project that I have. And what I'm doing is finding that thread until it sees me through. And if there are moments of reprieve wherein I have to ponder, you know, but I've never banged my head up against the wall and said, oh no, I'm in trouble. I don't mm-hmm. know where this story is going. I haven't done that with any of the books that are out now in the world. And I think that, you know, I'll share something. And I recently finished a manuscript where I did have to a couple of times say, ah, what's the story here? And with that manuscript, you know, right now, I may or may not share this with the world. It doesn't matter to me if I do or I don't. You know, it's done. It's finished. And I may go back and revisit it, which I've never done before with any of the books that I've written. So that last manuscript, I finished it about 3 weeks ago, was a new experience for me mm-hmm. in terms of that. But I also realized that I wasn't telling what I normally tell in my novels, which is all about the sins of the father, cause and effect. I'm big on the family dynamic. I'm big on what goes on culturally and regionally in the South. And so this last manuscript that I finished wasn't fully like the others that I've done. And so I'll see, you know, so there's an honest answer to that. Is it writer's block? I don't think so. I'm not sure that I would ever admit that was a reality for me, because I believe that when you're involved in writing a novel, the whole thing is a process. The whole thing is its own life force. And my job is to kind of get out of my own way and let that come through and,
exactly.
and in whatever manner it needs to.
Exactly. Okay.
Yeah.
Here's another question for you. When you write, who controls the book, you or your characters? I think I know what the answer is, but
do you? Well, good. You tell me what the answer is.
Well, I also am a writer, so I'm going to say your characters do. Your characters dictate the story. because they can make a turn on you. I mean, you can have everything outlined out, but when you're writing your characters out and your character's going along, all of a sudden you find yourself going in a direction that the character doesn't want to go. It wants to go over here.
Well, you know, I confess I must be a control freak because I think I'm running the show.
Well, you may think you're running the show.
Nobody's taken over my book, including who I'm writing about.
You may think
I will bend you to my will because I can. How about that?
Well, that's true. You've always bent us to your will. That is an absolute truth.
Well, you all have just been a constant joy for me throughout my career, and I couldn't be more grateful to you. And you're just, both of you are just fun. You know, it's just a joy. And I look so forward to writing Jim Christina and Bobby Jean Bell and saying, guess what, y'all? You know, I mean, I would like to come to your house again, if you'll let me. And you all have always been so gracious, and I am just eternally grateful to the pair of you. You do such a fine example. But such a great show for so many author friends that I know. Yeah, well, y'all are great people. Y'all are great people.
But you're a really good writer. And right now, let's take a real quick break out for Creative Edge. Publicity, if you... You know, when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. No, they work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals and needs. So Creative Edge, it's your brand and your future. Mickey Mickelson, publicist, www.creative-edge.services.
Are we there?
We're here.
Okay.
Here we go again. I put you on mute again.
Jim Croce put his guitar up.
I just sit here on mute just in case I blow my nose or something. Anyway.
You've gotten awfully relaxed out there in Idaho, Jim.
I know. It's a secret studio I have at the mountains. Mickey's got a lot of really great clients. In fact, one of them has been on our show a couple times, Tosca Lee, who's a New York Times bestselling writer. And we've had actually all of his writers on at one time or another. And they're starting to recycle back through again. And we just enjoy his writers, as we enjoy all of our writers. But we do have our favorites, Claire.
Claire.
If y'all better say that I'm sitting right here.
I know.
Well, I belong to a local reading group, and we read Dancing to an Irish Reel as a reading group a couple of months ago. So, yeah, we love you, Claire.
I'm so glad to hear that. I really appreciate you telling me that.
Well, that was the first one we read, Dancing to an Irish Reel.
Yeah, and the other one.
It might have been.
The other one.
Portal in Time.
I think we read both of those the first time we had you on as a guest. We had read
both. Yeah, I think I've been with y'all since, every book seems to me.
Well, you've been on our show since 2015. So.
Yeah, since our first
season. I braved going to the LA studios in the valley right. and getting in. And I took one look at that elevator and I said, where's the stairs?
Outside the door.
You remember
to the
that
right.
elevator?
Yeah, I do.
You delayed an anniversary trip that you were taken up to
Carmel,
Monterey, Carmel. And
yeah,
came in the studio
right.
that night. Yeah. We'll never forget
come
that.
There
we'll never forget
and
that.
Be with y'all.
Yeah.
And I've got great pictures. I've got great pictures of us too.
Yeah.
So it was a fun night. In fact, all the nights that you're on are fun. Okay, Claire, we're running out of time. If you want to tell our audience where they can find you, website, email address, Facebook, whatever you got.
Yes, sir. I'd be pleased to. Claire Fullerton, Claire with an E, and Fullerton is spelled just like it sounds. .com. We'll get you there. And let me say that Bobby reading about bookshop.org, oh yes, I mean, every author I know is so excited that bookshop.org exists, because we all have our favorite bookstores in our hometowns. And in mine, I've got Novel Bookstore Memphis and Burke's Books, and lovely people involved in both bookstores. And they're so kind, they love each other. They show up at each other's events. It's a wonderful scene. And with this pandemic, and really just in general, you know, with so much happening online in the interest of the consumer's convenience, you know, you think about these people running the business because they love it. Mm-hmm. It's their life force. They're in it for the right reasons. And so, mm-hmm. you know, we want to support those bookstores because they're so much fun to go into. And typically they are a community hub, especially where I'm from in the Deep South. Yeah. You know, they're the hub of every community there. And so, mm-hmm. you know, Bobby Jean, you did a great job with that spot. I commend you. And I just wanted to express my gratitude and my undying support for bookshop.org. I wish them all success.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. And again, Claire, thanks for taking your time out to be with us.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, we love having you.
Monogram thank you note in the mail to both y'all. Bobby Jean, send me y'all's address. I understand Jim has moved. I got to know where he is. I got to do my monogram stationery.
I'm not moving.
Okay. Thank you all from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Claire.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Claire Fullerton. Claire Fullerton, what a wonderful lady and great writer.
Oh my gosh, this book.
There's so much in it. It's just rich.
It's just rich.
It is. Well, most of it, I think, is the backstory and the dialogue.
Oh, but the luminous writing where you can hear you can hear every part of nature that's singing in every scene that's set outside, or you can see the dining room. You can, you know, you're just there with eyes that I don't normally have.
Right.
I mean, I don't see things that way.
Right.
And it's fabulous. She's just wonderful. She's just wonderful.
So did you like our new opening?
Yes, I did like the new opening from our bunker. I did like the opening. And, you know, I think it was interesting, really, that you chose that particular theme music, because we all know that it's from Superman, right?
Right, of course.
And so there's a little, you know, sci-fi kind of thing to it. But really, that all of our authors, they're supermen and women.
Absolutely.
And I really began, as you had, you know, emailed me the other day and asked me to take a listen and all. And I listened and I listened. And that's why I was late getting back to you, is because I was really thinking about it. I thought, you know, every story is about a hero,
right?
A guide and a hero. And every story, you know, storytelling, and it is those that write are our supermen and women who take us on a journey.
Right.
And who step out on faith to do it. That's their cape. They're stepping out on faith. And so I thought, you know what? I like that you've chosen that.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Well, next week we have a returning author from Creative Edge, Catherine Hudson. She is joining us again. She was with us last October 2019, right after we started doing live shows again. So she'll be with us next week. And for Bobby Jean, of course, and Russ Avison, who will show up when he wants to, myself, Ronan Rosner, and Sam Hassan, and the good folks at LA Talk Radio, we are out of here.